are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Welcome to AfterSight's High Country News Program. I'm KG Greenspun, reading from the April edition. Perilous paths for mule deer, pronghorn, and elk. Migration is a means of survival, but the routes they follow need protection. Feature cover story by Christine Peterson. The first mule deer to become famous was named Jet, after the University of Wyoming graduate student who MacGyvered her tracking collar. The name fit an animal that walked, bounded, and sometimes ran 150 miles north every spring, chasing greener pastures, and then trekked 150 miles south each fall to escape deep snow. Thousands of people followed Jet's seasonal journeys on Facebook and Twitter and mourned when she died of exposure in December 2016. The following year, a deer that researchers named Mo for her momentum caught the public's attention. Julie Laig, a 49-year-old woman living in the almost ghost town of Superior, Wyoming, was so inspired by Mo's long migration that she spent the last 7 years driving two-track roads and hiking hillsides and creek bottoms, photographing and videoing deer for a growing online audience. Deer 255 didn't need a name. Between 2019 and 2022, four animated videos of her 240-mile annual trek from southwest Wyoming to central Idaho, the longest one-way mule deer migration ever recorded, racked up almost 4 million views online. Her collar number became synonymous with marathon feats. "Oh, a celebrity," chirped a University of Wyoming student as scientists weighed a 2.5-year-old female deer on a frigid day last December near Superior. Like 255, deer 665 had acquired a reputation for epic walkabouts, migrating more than 220 miles in the spring of 2022. Researchers captured her using a net shot from a helicopter, then blindfolded her to keep her as calm as possible while they drew blood and measured her body fat, all part of an ongoing effort to understand why some mule deer travel so far. It's no wonder that deer like 255 and 665 fascinate us, despite migrating almost 500 miles over multiple mountain passes in just 6 months. They finish the year fatter than deer that stay home. But this story is about more than just a few celebrity cervids. Countless mule deer, pronghorn, and elk have made such long-distance journeys year after year for thousands of years from sagebrush steppe to alpine meadows and back again. Paradoxically, these grueling trips help sustain herd numbers when conditions are harsh and food is scarce. More and more, however, the west migrating ungulates must navigate a treacherous human landscape. Deer, pronghorn, and elk leap over or crawl under fences and dodge highway traffic. They skirt rural subdivisions and race across oil fields, often with offspring in tow. They time their movements to avoid deadly trudges through crusty snow, but the fact that many ungulates still survive their long and increasingly dangerous journeys doesn't mean they always will. Many of their routes have already been blocked by roads, subdivisions, and industrial development. All this stymied movement, combined with chronic wasting disease, drought, diminished food supplies, and loss of habitat, it's taking its toll. Colorado's mule deer population plunged from 600,000 in 2006 to about 433,000 in 2018, while Wyoming's dropped from about 578,000 in 1991 to about 330,000 in 2021. I am significantly concerned about mule deer, Brian Nesvik, Wyoming Game and Fish Department director, said in November. Yet, efforts to conserve migratory routes are also struggling to move forward, facing pushback from critical lawmakers, wary landowners, and skeptical industry leaders. Meanwhile, deer like 255 and 665 still follow the ancient pathways they likely learned from their mothers, headed for the best food they can reach. Hall Sawyer documented the longest migration of land mammals in the lower 48, somewhat by accident. Sawyer, a wildlife biologist, lives in southeast Wyoming, where he studies deer, pronghorn, and elk for government agencies and energy companies. In December 2011, he collared dozens of deer in the southern end of Wyoming's Red Desert for a Bureau of Land Management study. He knew the animals moved around but wasn't sure how far or where they went. So, in early 2012, he hired a pilot to track the caller's radio signals. The pilot flew in widening circles over the sagebrush, covering much of the Red Desert, but heard nothing. Then, on his way north to refuel, he dipped toward the base of the Wind River Range. There, he heard a beep, a signal indicating that a deer had traveled about 80 miles from its December location. Must be a fluke, Sawyer thought. A deer pushed unusually far south by bad weather. Surely no deer move that far every year, but the following fall, the same deer returned to the Red Desert. By 2013, Sawyer and his colleagues had established that some deer walked from the Red Desert to the Hoback Basin, southeast of Jackson, Wyoming, and back every year, a round-trip journey of about 300 miles. Native peoples have long known that some deer travel with the seasons. Jason Baldus, an Eastern Shoshone tribal member and executive director of the Wind River Tribal Buffalo Initiative, said it was traditional knowledge passed down from ancestors. We also have the archaeological evidence that holds up those stories and beliefs, he said, including artifacts found at the bottlenecks along the Red Desert to Hoback migratory route. Anecdotal reports from local hunters, ranchers, and biologists suggested that some Red Desert deer migrate, but Sawyer and his colleagues were the first to use GPS satellites to map the migration from start to finish. News of the results spread like dirt in a Wyoming windstorm, from the New York Times to National Geographic and Al Jazeera. The Wyoming Migration Initiative, a University of Wyoming program co-founded in 2012 by Wyoming Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit leader Matthew Kaufman, began tracking and mapping migrations throughout the state. Professors, graduate students, and volunteers spent weeks each year fitting deer, pronghorn, moose, bighorn sheep, and elk with satellite collars, measuring rump fat, collecting poop samples, and checking for pregnancies with ultrasound wands. By 2019, Western wildlife agencies were working with the U.S. Geological Survey and UW researchers to map migrations in places like Arizona's Kaibab Plateau, where mule deer travel up to 90 miles from canyon country to flats each spring and fall, and northwest Colorado, where some of the bear's ears herd move up to 70 miles each spring and fall. Researchers have now mapped dozens of deer, elk, and pronghorn routes in Wyoming, and they keep documenting more, including one that extends from northeast Wyoming to Montana, and another that wanders on and off the Wind River Reservation. I like thinking that these migrations that are happening right now on the reservation have always been there, and we have always tracked them, said Albert Mason Jr., an Eastern Shoshone tribal member and graduate wildlife researcher with the Wind River Tribal Buffalo Initiative. I like thinking and assuming that my ancestors followed the same deer down the same paths they used, and now see their two descendants relying on each other. All the complicated scientific equipment, the helicopters, net guns, collars, algorithms, satellites, ultrasound machines, and maps led the graduate students and professors who use it to one conclusion. Migration leads deer to better food. Better food makes fatter deer. Fatter deer survive harsh winters better, and the deer that fare best in winter deliver bigger fawns who grow up to be bigger, fatter, healthier deer. The same is true for elk, pronghorn, and bighorn sheep. So, in 2016, the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission voted to formally designate the Red Desert to Hobback Migration Corridor as vital wildlife habitat. 2 years later, not long after the Trump administration also recognized the importance of migration corridors, the commissioners designated two more. The designations are intended as guidance for land managers and county planning boards, indicating where development could harm migration, as well as where fence removal could benefit it. They also help federal agencies decide whether to grant leases for oil and gas development. This was not the first time the commission had designated vital wildlife habitat, but migrating wildlife cross private land as well as public, and some landowners feared corridor designations would lead to land use restrictions. By late 2019, after Game and Fish proposed designated another two corridors, conservative state lawmakers decided that the recommendations should go no further and consider drafting bills to undercut future designations. Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon, Republican, had already created a task force on migration corridors, and in 2020, he issued an executive order stipulating that only the governor's office could designate new corridors. Some conservationists denounced the order as political, arguing that wildlife decisions should be made by wildlife professionals. Others saw it as a middle ground of sorts, a way to conserve deer without alarming conservative lawmakers. 3 years passed without any new designations. Meanwhile, the slicing and dicing of Wyoming's migration corridors by roads, developments, and subdivisions continued. If deer can be legends, 255 already is one. After researchers collared her in the Red Desert in March 2016, they tracked her as she walked 90 miles farther than the rest of her herd, from southern Wyoming through ranches and subdivisions, over mountain ranges and highways, and into eastern Idaho. Researchers wrote off the walkabout as a fluke. 2 years later, after her collar malfunctioned, they recaptured her by chance. After analyzing the data stored in her collar, they realized her Idaho trip was a regular migration. Deer 255 is fat and elusive and, according to researchers, can get huffy with her fawns, nudging them to keep moving with body language familiar to the parents of Homo sapiens. During her journeys, she crosses land managed by the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the state of Wyoming, not to mention innumerable private parcels and busy roads. I wanted to understand why she and her fawns went to all this trouble, and so, on an early October day last year, I stood on a rutted two-track road on Forest Service land north of Jackson, Wyoming, with Game and Fish Migration Coordinator and Habitat Specialist Jill Randall and Jackson Wildlife Biologist Allie Cordemanch staring at a map of Deer 255's most recent coordinates. Every few hours, Deer 255's collar transmits her location to a satellite, which sends the data to the Wyoming Migration Initiative's servers every couple of days. We didn't have her real-time location, but we knew where she spent most of the summer. Even if we didn't glimpse her, we could tour her summer home and even peek into the refrigerator. We followed overgrown trails through aspen stands, then up a steep, barren hillside in the Bridger-Teton National Forest. The official Red Desert Corridor stops south of here, but this area is the summer range of some of the herd's most ambitious migrators. As we approached the top of the knobby mountains, stepping through sagebrush and grass still green from summer, we saw what made this country worth the trip. "This is classic summer range," Randall said, pointing to open meadows bordering tangled forests. "There's cover here. They can get away from predators and get in the shade when it's hot in the summer. But then they have foraging and feeding where they'll have more forbs out in the open." On one hillside were clumps of dried yarrow and remnants of the summer's flowery asters, clover, and protein-rich vetches. We knew from 255's collar data that she had spent much of the summer in the wooded area nearby. We also knew from the plants that either deer or elk had feasted here this summer. "Look at this. Gone, 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 gone. All those flower heads are gone," Randall said, pointing to a balsam root's headless stems. Balsam root, wild geraniums, and lupines are a mule deer's summertime meat and potatoes. Researchers with the Migration Initiative use the phrase "surfing the green wave" to describe how large ungulates like deer, pronghorn, and elk follow the choicest bits of food up in elevation as spring advances. And while some deer will eagerly munch backyard ornamentals, migratory deer are strategic about what they eat. Young plants have high protein and low fiber, the best combination for mule deer, but lack volume. Older plants are larger, but about as nutritious as pencils. Deer prefer plants of intermediate age, the Goldilocks stage of growth, said Anna Ortega, a former UW graduate student who studied the Red Desert deer for 7 years. "That's why tracking this green up of plants is really good for deer," she said. "That healthier food is migration's reward," said Kaufman. After a decade of research, biologists learned that the Red Desert deer develop migration portfolios of a sort. Part of the herd lingers in the desert, another chunk goes 50 or so miles, and the final group travels about 150 with rare deviations in routes. An individual doe, for example, may deliver her fawns near the hillside where she was born. Ortega believes that the various strategies evolved because, depending on conditions, each one paid off in different ways. But as climate change deepens droughts and development fragments winter range, the short-distance migratory population keeps shrinking. More and more, the long migration to the mountains is the only winning strategy. In 1888, before Wyoming became a state, Kip Alexander's great-grandparents moved from the Nebraska sandhills to southwest Wyoming, the ancestral territory of several tribes, including the Eastern Shoshone, Cheyenne, and Crow. His family held on to that original 160 acres and expanded the property, raising cattle and growing hay. Alexander, who just turned 80, still lives on that land, which is ringed by the snow-covered peaks of the Wind River and Wyoming ranges. His house sits just to the west of the designated Red Desert Migration Corridor, near the face of the Wind River Range, and about halfway between the Deer's summer and winter ranges. Alexander also owns and grazes almost 1,800 acres that jut into the route like a pointed finger. He watches mule deer cross that land each fall, flowing up and over the sagebrush and grass-covered hills before hopping fences, crossing a highway, and continuing south. Meanwhile, his neighbors sell their land to developers who divide it into 40, then 20, then 10-acre ranchettes, each with its roads, fences, houses, and dogs. About 12 years ago, after realizing that his adult children weren't going to take over the ranch, Alexander worked with the Wyoming Stock Growers Land Trust to create a permanent easement on the land he owns in the corridor. He can still graze cows and grow hay on it, and it can be sold, but it can't be sliced up or developed. While some landowners donate easements to land trusts, others, like Alexander, sell their development rights in exchange for direct payments. If you're going to ask people to change management or do some things on their private land to benefit a public resource, said Jim Magagna, who runs sheep in the Red Desert Corridor and is executive vice president of the Wyoming Stock Growers Association, the public ought to be willing to pay for it. Money for easements generally come from private donors, state or federal entities, or some combination of the three. Because the federal government prioritizes easements on land with agricultural or wildlife habitat value, the state's corridor designations have helped some landowners secure easement funding. Easements for corridors got a serious boost in 2021 when the U.S. Department of Agriculture allocated more than $20 million for fence improvements, wildlife habitat restoration, and easement purchases, a pilot project that eventually established 17 easements on 11,830 acres on designated migration corridors in Wyoming. In 2023, the USDA created the Migratory Big Game Initiative, which expanded the program across Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana. Arthur Middleton, a USDA senior advisor for wildlife conservation and a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, said the money represents one very tangible way to save migration corridors from death by 1,000 subdivisions. Habitat restoration and enhancement and protection takes time to get done, either because of the relationships that need to be built or because of the ecology, Middleton said. And one thing you don't often have when there's a political pendulum swinging back and forth is time. Mark Anselmi and his sister Gina own two adjoining parcels amounting to about 300 acres of rolling grass and sagebrush in the middle of the Red Desert Tehabback migration route just east of Alexander's property. Mark, who served on the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission, understands the importance of intact prairie and foothills, not only to mule deer and elk, but also to sage grouse and songbirds. In early December, he received a letter from the Stock Growers Land Trust informing them that their easements were under review for purchase and could take about 3 years to finalize. Developers and real estate agents are pressuring him to sell his land, Anselmi said, but he doesn't want to subdivide like some of his neighbors. He sold 75 acres years ago, and he worries that without an easement, he or his children might someday sell the rest. Enough development, and the deer won't be able to move through at all anymore. So what do you tell your grandkids? I remember the good old days, he said, sitting at a round kitchen table in the little cabin he built on his land. That's terrible. They should be able to see this stuff. Easements do help, but a map of the Red Desert Migration Corridor, arguably the most well-known and best protected in the West, shows dozens of parcels with no easements, some covering almost 5,000 acres. And while development has been prevented in some areas, such as a migration bottleneck near Fremont Lake, it hasn't stopped completely. In 2022, the Sublette County Commissioners approved rezoning 299 acres into 51 lots in the middle of the corridor. Later that year, it approved the construction of a 32,400-square-foot trauma therapy center, along with more than 130 parking spaces on the edge of the corridor. One of the commissioners reminded the crowd during the vote that the corridor designation does not apply to private land, reported Wildfile, a nonprofit news site. And that's the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll finish this next week. You are listening to AfterSight.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.